Welcome to the weekend edition of the Price of Business Show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. On today's program, we got a lot to cover, as always, and looking forward to introducing you to today's guests. But in addition to that, I do want to mention that the Price of Business, which is one of the longest-running business shows in the country, continues 24/7 at priceofbusiness.com. We are adding new content all the time. There you can see all of our regular guests. We have reoccurring guests from Fox Business, from Yahoo Finance, gentlemen like Cody Willard, who was a longtime CNBC and Fox Business anchor. He's on this program every single week. And so we're excited by the talent that we bring you. Also, I do want to mention I've got a book called Making New Rich Books Work for You, and exclusively for our listeners of this program. It's available at a ridiculously low price. If you want to get more information about that, go to priceofbusiness.com. If you read anything by people like Tim Ferriss or Robert Kiyosaki, who's been on my show many, many times, and you know, really were excited but had little to show for it when you try to pursue those things, my book explains why. There's something going on, and the problem really isn't with these authors. It's usually with the reader. And you can get more information about that at priceofbusiness.com. With that, here's our first guest right here on The Price of Business. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. One of my favorite series. One, you know, that I was delighted about from the very beginning, because I think there's a dearth of information on and a lack of emphasis on the art of negotiation. And there's a spirit to it and not just tactics involved. And so when I had Michael Marino on my program to talk about this, and he, you know, it was like almost like a V8 moment, you know, the little clonk as you pop your head, because it's like, wow. And the reason why is because, frankly, his approach has been largely ignored, is largely ignored in the culture. Yet humans are the same. We haven't changed that much. And if we have, we've changed in such ways where the art of negotiation is more important than ever. And so this series is one of my favorites. And we get great feedback from listeners about this. Michael, glad to have you back on the program. Real quickly, a little bit about your practice, your legal practice, and the best website for more information.
Kevin, good morning. And once again, always a pleasure, and have enjoyed very much our discussions and some of these, if you will, kind of old school concepts that have, I think, a lot of relevancy today. So with respect to myself, practice traditional labor law, representing management. So I've been involved in lots of negotiations. And of course, it involves into other areas, representing executives and celebrities and people that are involved in any type of contract negotiation or crisis management type of dispute. So the principles that we talk about today have kind of evolved as to what I've been able to find to work most successfully. And of course, we've talked again, how do you define success? It's about your client. It's not about the lawyer. It's about achieving the objective. So my law firm, one of those big institutional law firms, 1,000 lawyers. So we have a global reach and, of course, a full service firm, but several hundred lawyers involved in the very types of things that we're talking about today.
And your website?
Yes, the website is safearth.com, and pretty easy to find, and you'll find all of the offices and my many of my great partners and explanations of, again, in snapshots of things that we do.
Yeah, and it's SEYFARTH.com. Let's get into this topic. This is a good one. And the springboard, or if you will, the nugget, the takeaway, we'll cheat and give that in advance. It's really all about good faith.
It really is. Yes. I think that, you know, we've been talking now over a period of several of the podcasts, and we've tried to isolate some of the principles dealing with respect, knowing what your adversary is. He's not necessarily your enemy, defining what success is. But I thought that one of the questions that came from your listeners really kind of hit the heart of the matter, which is, hey, why do negotiations go south? And what do, and they use the word smart attorneys, so we'll work on that assumption, that smart attorneys, how what do they do to try to prevent those outcomes? Well, we know that fundamentally, smart or good or effective attorneys, they're prepared. And they may pray for peace and they prepare for war. But there are two fundamental things, I think, that are involved. They have to define what a successful deal would be from their client's perspective. And secondly, they have to have a plan B if our adversary, for whatever reason, is not dealing in good faith. So unpacking, I think what we want to spend some time today is trying to unpack, what does that really mean when we say deal in good faith? And conversely, what happens if it's not the calling card that you are using and you're not transparent and you have other agendas? And what can actually be the effect of that? And it really captures, I think, full circle, the questions that came up, which are, that's when negotiations go south.
Yeah, this is phenomenal. And what's really important is that it is very holistic, isn't it? Because you can have rhetoric around good faith, about honesty, integrity, all kinds of catchphrases that you hear in commercials all the time. But behavior is really the primary driver in this.
Yes, 100%. I mean, I think, again, the key is, as we know, actions can speak louder than words. Words are important, too, but it becomes fairly apparent pretty quickly when you're dealing with someone across the table. Is, are they just giving lip service to the idea that, hey, we're here to get a deal, I'll take a deal, but I need this and I need that? You know, it's fine, and you would be expected to take outlying positions, but what you have to be prepared to do is, when you're called on that, when you know it's something that the other side is not going to be interested in, you're really going to have to negotiate that, you better be prepared to give an explanation and boil it down. Hey, this is why it's important. They may never agree with you, but at least they see that, okay, I get it. I understand why that's important to you. Hey, that doesn't work for us, but that, of course, gives us the foundation, if we have communication and dialogue, to work towards other things that we've made reference to, like linking proposals, where, hey, this is something you don't want. Well, how about if I link it with something that you do want and I don't want? That's how we show that we're working towards a real effort that is sincere, respectful, and embodies good faith, so that you can try to work your way towards a deal that will actually work. And in the end, as you've often heard, neither side may be fully happy, but they know that they've got a fair deal that both sides can work with. And then, of course, we can get into what happens if neither side is dealing in good faith.
Yeah. And this is a good segue to our, you know, example you have for today, which is the music industry. You know, one of my favorite, you know, I'm showing my age, and I was little when I loved them, but one of my favorite groups was Badfinger. This was a handpicked group by the Beatles. They were involved in a lot of the Beatles albums. They were phenomenal. They were so mishandled by management and bad faith that two of them actually ended up committing suicide. And in both cases, it was a tribute to the trauma and drama of dealing with really terrible management. And right, this kind of thing, that the music industry is among the most notorious when it comes to operating in bad faith, from everything I've read. And you've got a phenomenally interesting story in this space, and relates right back to the good faith concept, that centerpiece here.
Well, you've hit upon a theme, Kevin, that I think really does, not only is it kind of fascinating to peel back and think about and reflect about, but yes, for better or for worse, there's certainly a lot of anecdotal stories, very much like you talked about. And if we kind of think about that, there is some uniqueness when we look at music, because especially with a young talent, no one really knows where's that going to go. Is he or she going to be a huge success? Is he or she going to flop? So, you know, I think the traditional industry perspective had been, hey, we hold the cards here. We've got established, we've had people, we've made stars, we're going to make you a star, we've been successful. So what that leads to is really contracts of adhesion. It's kind of like, look, this is the deal. Now, there may be lip service to saying that, of course, we want to work with you, etc. But obviously, from the side of the, quote, management team, this also spills over, of course, into athletes and negotiations in the sports industry, where you really can't predict, especially at a young age. So, you know, we make some cultural references here, and this is one that I think is about as cutting edge as you can get, because it does involve the story, kind of the backstory, and I'm not involved in any way and don't claim any particular expertise or inside knowledge, but there's a lot of public information about Taylor Swift's recent album and one of her off-the-charts songs, called Father Figure. And when I took the time to, not being a Swiftie myself, but to actually go through the lyrics I find are absolutely fascinating, because she talks in effect about being a young girl coming in, getting this contract of adhesion, all these great things being said to her, we're going to take care of you, etc. But it evolves into a scenario where over time, she felt that no one, of course, could have predicted how the monumental success that she achieved. And she has a great line in there about, we want you to play, but we don't want you to reign. And if anyone reigns, it is certainly Miss Taylor Swift. So the bottom line is that she felt that she had not been treated fairly, and that her works, very similar to the references that you made, we see it all the time with various bands, that the management team somehow tried to abscond with, and these are just, you know, we don't know, as I say, the actual facts, but certainly the allegations. And so Miss Swift was in a position to take a decade and remaster all of her songs that she felt had been, the rights had been taken from her, and now we've had Taylor's version, and if there were ever a boomerang that came back to haunt the people that purchased what they thought were purchasing the rights to her music, she has certainly, I think, outplayed and got checkmate on that particular issue. So really, really fascinating, very unique, but it does epitomize, obviously not all talent ends up being in a position to have that kind of impact and effect.
Yeah, I'd say the vast majority of talent does not have that.
Right.
Not to that effect.
Yes.
I mean,
that we can certainly
say. Yeah, she now owns her.
Yeah.
Whereas so many, and some of the very, very big names over the decades never felt like they were even remotely close to owning their work, and therefore even their lives. It's profound, the impact, and how really negative it can be. So take us through. Go ahead. Take us through the decade.
Well, I was going to reflect a little bit on that in the sense that, you know, I have been involved in negotiating various music and entertainment agreements. And the classic example is, and again, she epitomizes the extreme, but you have a situation where you may have an established manager, a successful manager. They're not necessarily dealing in bad faith, but they're certainly going to protect themselves, and they don't have any idea where this is going to go. I'm sure, you know, it's not a good analogy, but drug companies make the same case. Hey, yes, that's the cost of drugs. That's because we had to put millions and millions of dollars in investment. We don't know if that drug's going to be successful or not. Well, in a sense, when you have young talent, no one knows. From the talent side, look at the position they're in. They need a spark. They need to get a link. They need to get identification. and they may get their chance and they may have to compromise all the things we've talked about that you should do before a negotiation, which make sure you know the lines that you're going to draw in the sand, and not sign something that you don't think is in your best interest. Well, if you're really looking for that potential to have the spotlight shine on you or to get your opportunity, you may very well compromise that. And you end up signing again what we would probably call a contract of adhesion, where all the cards, all the rights are held by the management group. Then when that person does achieve success, they realize exactly your point, which is they don't have the ability to control because they had already given it away. So we could debate and we could hear from both sides, you know, hey, what constitutes good faith in that context? But I think that what I try to do, if I'm on the talent side, I would want to be looking at, hey, there should be some exits here. Like, this deal is not a lifelong deal. There has to be a durational aspect. There have to be some triggers. Hey, if I meet certain thresholds, then I have the right, I'm out. They have to, and let's face it, all young talent may not have the opportunity to get that kind of advice, to realize that you may have more power than you might think, even if you haven't yet hit, because you can look for exits and thresholds that would allow you more flexibility and keep to a specific duration the time that the management team, you know, in fairness, gets a chance to recover their investments and take care of their side of the equation.
Yeah, that's very good. By the way, I love the parallel between the medical community, our pharmaceutical community, and music, because I think they are both notorious. I think they're very problematic, and we could do. I'll do a different discussion with someone else on that. Yeah.
So we could probably spend a whole separate program on the Taylor Swift chronology and scenario. But I think it does epitomize kind of what is not untypical for a young artist or a young talent, or let's say an unknown. Not that it's not necessarily an age issue, but if you're an unknown person and you're trying to find a way to get a breakthrough. Now, one of the things, of course, that has happened that, again, would be an entirely different discussion, and that is through social media, a lot of really smart young people figure out the ways that they don't even need to get the management deal because they can access different forms of social media and start to get traction and attention. And all of a sudden, they have leverage that a generation ago, the bands that you and I grew up with they'd never had that kind of opportunity that exists today. So, you know, I think that that's, you know, it's a fascinating story, and we may want to dig more deeply in it. But I did, in our time, wanted to, you know, kind of segue into the fact that let's just think about this. It's not just in this type of extraordinary scenario we're talking about with Taylor Swift. This pendulum comes up. If you take the core practice, the hundreds of collective bargaining agreements I've mentioned before, I've been involved in with dozens of different unions and my brethren and colleagues on the other side of the table. And one thing that is always clear to me, hey, I may have all the cards today during this negotiation. And I may be able to, you know, really put you in a position where I could put the squeeze on and, you know, be able to have you agree to protect your members to really some draconian provisions. Is that what we really want to do? Well, I don't think so, because you know what? 3 years from now, I got to sit across the table and deal with you. And hey, the economy may have changed. The labor market may have changed. The company's business may have changed. And how am I going to dig into the well of, hey, Joe or Tony or Pete, you got to work with me on this? Well, yeah, right. After what you did to me the last time, that's where the pendulum comes back for all of us. So, yeah. Those core concepts, you know, respect and yes, get success, and you can define success but you want to be careful. And then, you know, quickly, we see this every day, whether it's we're watching the NFL and somebody is 40 points ahead going into the fourth quarter. Do you really want to crush the other side and run up the score? I think even this last weekend, I don't remember the game, but you know, the team that was ahead was down on a 2 or 3 yard line. They could have easily scored another touchdown. What did they do? The quarterback took a knee, didn't run up the score. Because you know what? In 2 weeks, they're going to play those guys again. And why give unnecessary motivation to the other side to want to come back and show you where the pendulum, or in this case, a real hard boomerang, can come back to haunt you?
Yep, yep. With that, I got to start wrapping it up. But those are all very important points. And something that you alluded to, didn't say directly, but is so true, is that, you know, it's unique to have a record contract. Very unique. It's special.
Yes.
And so people are very inclined to do what's ever necessary to get it. And that's why you get Pat Kinker. That's why you get Peter Frampton. He had a horrible story. And Taylor Swift. And so it's very, very important for people to look at the big picture. The temptation is, oh, I want a 5-year contract. Can we make it 10? Well, guess what? You're enslaved to whatever rules you agree to for 10 years if you do that. Believe in yourself, because they believe in you, obviously, or they wouldn't offer a 5-year contract and say, no, let's eat you. And then you've got some jockeying position. That's so contrarian, though. You can say your final thought on that. We are playing Beat the Clock, but that's what I got out of what you're sharing as another tool, if you will.
100%. 100%. You really want to think through. And again, if you don't ask, then you ain't never going to get it into the contract. So, you know, you may say, look, they want 5. You say 2. What about 3? What about putting in criteria? What about things that, as I say, it occurs, again, whether it's a CEO going into a new position or any of us going into a new position, oftentimes we fail to look at the exit strategy. We get caught up in the exuberance of the moment, of the excitement. And again, what could be more exciting than actually signing a music contract or words that you wrote that are now going to go out into the public domain? That is very seductive. But you always have to look to the longer term and your interest and try to strike a balance in there. And then there may come a time that you have to literally draw the line and say, look, this just isn't going to work for me. And it may turn out that if you are recognized and your talent is recognized and it is a good an operation that does want to corral you and deal in good faith, you may end up with than more than you thought might have been possible at the outset.
Absolutely.
The key, I think, is
that. They'll respect your limits, by the way, whereas doormatting yourself means, oh, I can continue to do that.
Yes, exactly. That's why, you know, those buzzwords, and they're only words if you don't actually execute in action, but good faith, integrity, respect, and fairness, that's what makes good deals. You know, if you look at the arc of negotiation, as kind of what some of your opening remarks, there was a time this was done with a handshake. And my word was my bond. I shook on it. We didn't need a piece of paper. We didn't need anything. But what we evolved into, and yes, the legal profession certainly played a role in this, but we got into arguing over nuances because there were unexpected things that occurred. But there's a lot to be said for when I tell you something, you can rely upon it. And if I'm taking a hit, I take a hit. But I think that this is a good deal for both of us. And let's go forward and let's make it work. And if you don't do that, and if it's you're not using integrity, well, again, then you have a whole different scenario. And unfortunately, I think we're seeing that on the global stage, on the national stage, you know, in all types of things that are referred to as negotiations. But, you know, is there really good faith at the centerpiece of all of those items?
Yeah, Michael, I got to end with that. We went way over. Michael Marino.
Yeah, I'm so
thank
sorry.
You so much. No, it's okay. I actually control this microphone. So, Michael Marino,
yes.
Thanks so much. And I appreciate you. Great segment, and happy holidays. And I look forward to our next one.
Same to you. And thanks again, Kevin. Enjoyed it very much. Bye-bye.
I'm Kevin Price. This is the nationally syndicated Price of Business. Stay tuned for more after this. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. And you know, people call us a podcast, and I love that. And there's no question about it that most of our audience is through podcasting. You know, we're featured on some of the largest platforms out there, and we've got partnerships where our content reoccurs on national news sites. I get that. But we're actually a radio show. Think about it. This show is 25 years old next year. One of the longest continuously running shows of its kind. And so I'm not sure if the word podcast had been coined yet when this show got started in 2001. It's really unbelievable. And so we're coast to coast, markets around the country, and love what we do and grateful we continue to do it, particularly with people like my guest, David Dozer, who you'll find all over priceofbusiness.com, which is where we say the show continues 24/7, as we're always adding new audio, video, articles, and more. David, glad to have you back on the program. Dr. David Dozer, he's a professor emeritus of journalism at San Diego State University, one of part of my brain trust when it comes to talk about media, which I have an unusually high level of interest in because I've been in media since really the early 1990s. And David, always glad to have you on the program. You're also the author of a fascinating book that heavily based on reality facts, but is a fiction story, which some of the best fiction is like that. Talk a little bit about that real quick before we get started into our segment, and give your best website for people to learn more.
Well, thank you, Kevin, and happy birthday. Happy number 25. Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
You're welcome. My book is called The California Killing Field. It is a historical fiction based on the death penalty in California, and it follows the efforts of a reporter to uncover an attempt to organize a mass execution at San Quentin. And it deals a lot with the same issues, Kevin, that you and I talk about, which is the way in which media content can influence what people think and what they think about. And if you want more information about me and the book, you can go to my my website. It's called daviddozerbooks.com. Last name is French. Nobody knows how to spell it. It's spelled D-O-Z-I-E-R, daviddozerbooks.com.
There you go. Check that out. Let's talk a little bit about your topic. Not a little bit. We're going to jump into this, actually. That's one of my favorite things about our chats is that we go a little longer than I'm allowed on some of my other interviews. This is a great topic. Set the stage for us. And it really epitomizes one of the biggest problems in both culture, media, and politics today. Set the stage for us.
Well, basically what we've seen in the Trump administrations, and especially in the current Trump administration, is an incredibly sustained attack on the news media. And it's taken all kinds of forms, lawsuits against broadcasters, efforts using the Federal Communication Commission to intimidate broadcasters, and insulting individual reporters. And the topic today is something that just happened over the Thanksgiving weekend, which is the launch of a news bias portal by the White House. It's an official component of White House communication strategy, and it's called media bias in quotes for the simple reason that it is strictly focused on anything that criticizes Donald Trump. It's not looking at bias of right-wing news outlets. It is strictly focused on what you might call the center or left-of-center media. No criticisms of Fox or Breitbart or Newsmax. Strictly focused on anybody that says anything that the White House considers unfavorable towards Trump. And it's got a number of features that I have to say it's a pretty slick page when you actually go and poke around on it.
Yeah, got to check it out. We'll have a link to it. Make sure you send your comments about it to the White House, be you a fan or me less so. It's interesting. I have loathed for years. I'm right of center. You know that. I have a libertarian streak. I worked on the Reagan campaign. So I'm in weird territory. It just shows you how broke really both parties are. I don't like either one of them. One of them is utterly existential in its danger. The other just simply doesn't know what it's doing. When I look at the, who I like in the media today, it's shocking. I never liked Lawrence O'Donnell from SNBC. He seems arrogant. He's pompous. Blowhard. He takes way longer to say things than most people are required to do. But he is probably the most spot on when it comes to talking about what's going on in the media as it relates to the Trump administration, unlike anyone else. I mean, he did a great story about a month ago on the New York Times, which is one of the best newspapers out there. Yes, it's left of center. It bleeds into the factual page. I get that. But it's factual. And it's incredibly in-depth, like still no other publication out there. But he pointed out that, Lawrence O'Donnell pointed out, is that the problem here is that even in the New York Times, which he admires as well, even the New York Times finds itself talking about Trump in normal terms. They try to normalize Donald Trump. And that's something that's really ubiquitous in all the media. Frankly, of the mainstream media, probably the one that is closest to getting out of that framework is ironically the Wall Street Journal. Wall Street Journal is like, none of this is normal. We haven't seen this before. There's reasons why we haven't seen it, which is funny, right? Because you would think normally they are in there. In Trump's camp. Trump's not a conservative, though. This is what's really important for people to understand. He's an authoritarian. He is a big, big government in the economic sphere in areas he wants to be. Of course, terrorists being the finest example, right? But it's interesting. What you're pointing out is something that really lines up exactly with what Lawrence O'Donnell talks about on MSNBC. This is abnormal, what you're describing.
Well, absolutely. And I think that the parallels that I like to draw go back to Hitler and Nazi Germany, because the playbook's the same playbook. During Hitler's regime, he closed or took over an anti-Nazi news organization. He censored news content. And he banned books that the Nazis considered un-German. Well, how much of what we see going on with the MAGA wing of the Republican Party parallels that? The idea of banning books that conservative folks consider un-American. Well, un-American, un-German, it's that same idea that you get to sit back and decide that, some form of speech is considered un-American or un-German, and that's just counter to what the First Amendment was designed to protect. And I think that what Trump is doing is the same thing you see with not just authoritarian regimes. I think that's a soft term. When you talk about organizations that are dictatorships, where you have neighbors spying on neighbors, and see that in Trump's efforts here to basically turn in your mega sleuths, media sleuths, to basically track down these offending stories and alert the White House. And Kevin, I know you know this, but maybe not all of the listeners do, is that providing fresh content to a website is an important way to keep people coming back. If they click on the link and it's the same thing that was there before, they stop coming back. And so what Trump's doing is basically enlisting volunteers to keep providing fresh content for his website. Just send him a link of something you consider offensive to the Trump administration, and the White House will track it down. And by the way, all of that's being done at the White House end with taxpayer money. While it's a political operation, it's being done under the auspices of the White House and paid for with taxpayer dollars.
Yeah, it seems like a violation of several standing laws. I'd have to do my homework on that. But as you well know, unions are not allowed to get overtly political. That's been around forever. But the White House itself can do that? You're not allowed to fundraise from the White House. Are you telling me Donald Trump's not fundraising from the White House? Do you believe that? Now, again, this is opinion. There's no convictions. When I look at his no guardrails, no perimeters, behavior in general, can't tell me stuff like political calling, fundraising, all of that type of thing. I cannot believe that is not happening. Again, I have no evidence. I know we live in a CCC culture. So, and I don't want to make false accusations. But when I look at what he is overt about, there's no doubt in my mind, that he's that way in stuff that is explicitly seen as illegal, in my opinion, again. I had a guest on who's a contributor at Dateline NBC, very smart guy, and we talked about, politics, and he talked about when, he never supports candidates, he supports issues of candidates, and this is interesting. He's clearly right of center, very smart guy, very nice guy, and he goes, I don't look at it as getting behind a politician. I look at it as getting on a train to a destination. And so when I look at a candidate, where will his or her train take me? I look at a candidate, and those are the things that drive my decision making. I said, wow, that's a very interesting analogy. I'm going to do that with you right now on the 2024 election. And I said, we had one candidate who I thought was terrible. And if you get on that candidate's train, you're going to end up in a broken down train in the middle of nowhere. Directionless, really a lot of, what does this train even believe? A lot of those issues. Then there's another train that if you get on that train, you're going to end up in Berlin in the mid-1930s.
Yeah.
You're forced to get on one of those two trains. I guarantee you it won't be the second one.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right about the second train. I'm not altogether – I voted for Kamala Harris, actually gave some money to her campaign, but she ran a poor campaign. But
terrible
campaign. It was all back to Joe Biden basically put her in as a black person. Now, she's also, in my view, highly qualified, but he basically buried her in the basement and basically didn't want anybody strong in the Democratic Party that could challenge him in 2024. And then as his brain began to rot couldn't even debate Donald Trump. Not being able to debate Donald Trump, just pathetic. I mean, Donald Trump is mindless, unable to put two sentences together, and yet he was able to humiliate Biden on the stage, and then that created all of the tumult to get Biden off the ticket, and by then you have, 107 days to run a presidential campaign. And we have no idea how broken down that train would have been because we didn't get to see it run. But you're absolutely right that the second train won, and we are headed to Berlin circa 1935, and that's very, very problematic. And I think one of the things that's striking about this administration versus Trump's first administration was first time around there were actually people who didn't necessarily stand up to him, but they at least tried to divert his attention and get him off of his worst instinctual responses to things and just simply didn't do things he asked them to do and didn't put things on his desk that they knew would be problematic. Well, he made sure that there's absolutely nobody like that in his second administration.
Absolutely.
So what you have What you have now are a bunch of lapdogs and absolute zero guardrails. And then you couple that with a Supreme Court that doesn't seem capable of paying any attention to the balance of powers in a government where you have three co-equal branches, and you allow that kind of power to be isolated in the president's office, you're headed in a very, very bad direction. And I think the idea that this is an existential crisis for democracy, for representative democracy, I don't think that's an overstatement. I don't think that's hyperbole. That's just a description of the situation on the ground.
Yeah, yeah, no question about it. Sometime you and I will do a segment, and you defend the Democrats, and I'll attack both parties. And we'll ask the audience who won that debate. But
well, I don't think that's fair. I think it's a lot more fun if you and I both attack both parties from our different perspectives. I've said it to you before. California is a one-party state. Texas, where your headquarters is, a one-party state, and it's a bad thing. And I don't care if it's, you know, a Democratic one-party state or a Republican one-party state. The machinery of
the two-party
state gets
bad too.
Yeah,
that's why I won't vote for either party. I don't think ever again at this point. Won't swear to that, but I don't ever envision voting for either one of these parties. One is rudderless, doesn't really care what the voters think. They still dwell on issues that average Americans don't care about and are essentially elitist. And the other party is you know, really white nationalists. That's where I stand, but it's okay. I think you're right. This is a media segment. It'd be good to focus on that. And both parties, really, they have issues in this space. But one of them is darn right authoritarian about it. It is darn right neo-Nazi style. You mentioned the analogy was a great one you made with Germany. I'll go a step further. And in Joseph Goebbels, if you want to look him up, Joseph Goebbels, and then look up Stephen Miller. Look at the pictures.
Parallels.
Look at what they
parallels
say.
Parallels are striking.
They are striking, both visually and rhetorically. It's striking. And I'm not saying he's the reincarnation or anything like that, but just look at those and listen, read your stories. And, you know, the Nazis under Goebbels, they love to talk about the lying journalists over and over and over again. And Stephen Miller and the rest of the crew, I'm not sure if he was the architect of fake news, but that's all they talk about is fake news. And let me tell you, crying fake news is a firewall against the actual truth. Don't be lazy. Do your homework and figure out what's going on. And don't take anyone's word for it, especially someone like Donald Trump, who's been documented to lie continuously. And again, he hasn't been in a court because I don't think there's a court yet, or is. It's called perjury, right? He may have done that too. But I mean, there's a huge consensus. You know, the left calls it lying. I think it's probably, I believe that's accurate. The right calls it alternative facts. Very Orwellian, very Stephen Miller and Goebbels' way of putting things. But yeah, you need to grow up and do your homework is what I tell people who say fake news, fake news, fake news. Do your homework. We have more access to raw information as it happened than in any time in human history. So put on, you know, be a grown up and figure it out for yourself. It's not that hard to do.
Right. Well, here's a contrarian point of view. If this website, this media bias website, was something that, let's say, you and I were to run as kind of countervailing points of view, and got people to look at the news and to identify what they feel is bias or omission of context or lies, these are good skills to have. The problem with what President Trump is doing is that it's just focused on media that's critical of him rather than media generally. In fact, I think it's telling that one of the worst organizations in terms of lying is Fox News, and they had to pay close to $1 billion to settle a libel suit against voting machine companies for basically knowing that they were telling lies on the air, repeating Donald Trump's claim that the 2020 election was stolen. They knew that wasn't true, yep. But they kept repeating it. And so if you want to talk about bias and lying, then why would you leave out Fox News? Why are you picking on the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times or the Washington Post? And by the way, I want to say that I agree with you when you mentioned what a good newspaper the New York Times is. I also wanted to say, Wall Street Journal. I read both of those. And when not the op-ed stuff, but the hard news reporting is among the best in the country.
Well, right now, his op-eds are probably among the best in the country, because when they take on Donald Trump, which they routinely do in op-ed section, they do it in a way that has a level of credibility, particularly among those who are conservative, in a way the New York Times or the Washington Post could never have. And it's still heavily weighted in accurate data. Next, is it biased? You know, on economics, no question about it. And I happen to like a lot of their bias because I'm conservative. I'm an actual kind of Reagan conservative when you get down to it, free market guy. But what we have here, thank you. I agree with that. Like, I have an ownership position in Wall Street Journal. I don't, but I love the Wall Street Journal. And it's shocking to me it's owned by the same people as Fox News. I find that really shocking. And I'm glad he hasn't ruined it, because I can't help but think he's been tempted to because of the pressures that have been put on Murdoch for that. Frankly, the fact he hasn't taken action makes me think that his son is really heavily in charge. I know that he was put in higher positions, but I thought a lot of that could have been cosmetic. You know, look, he's now poised. I think he's in those positions, and he's been very prudent not to disrupt incredible quality work that's done at the Wall Street Journal. Final thoughts. We got to wrap it up. We're having too much fun, my friend.
Yes. Well, I think that the bottom line is that, as with all things, your listeners ought to check it out. Go to whatever search engine you have and type in White House Media Bias Portal or something to that effect, and you can go straight to it. It gets real prominent display. It'll be the first or second link. Go take a look at it and see what's going on, and ask yourself, why are just these media and these people being singled out? Going after bias and omission of context and lies in news coverage is a good skill, but what's the hidden agenda here?
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to have that also at priceofbusiness.com. I'll figure out where that link is. And here we go. It's a call to action. Submit media bias tips. And a page called Media Offenders. Yeah, this is what we're talking about. We'll have a link to that at priceofbusiness.com. It's on whitehouse.gov. How weird. Honestly, it's so third worldish when I look at this. it feels gangster, to be honest with you, when I look at it.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
All right.
It's dangerous.
Very dangerous. Yeah. And by the way, if the left did this, I would be equally offended. I mean, this is why it's important to stand up on principle. The biggest problem facing this country today is people who justify their party's bad behavior based on the bad behavior of the other party. That isn't a license for your party to behave poorly, too. What it is a call for all of us to hold our own parties accountable. And I don't hear that. I don't hear that on either side, to be honest with you. Thanks so much, as always, for being with us. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me. Always enjoy it. And that is the one and only Dr. David Dozier. Your book, one more time, your website is?
Website is daviddozierbooks.com.
And we'll have a link to that as well. I'm Kevin Price. Stay tuned for more on the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. We want to remind you the show is the show that never ends. And what we mean by that is it continues 24/7, where we're always adding new content, audio, video, articles, and more. Well, make sure you check out our newsletter, Read Instead, which provides the best of the Price of Business Digital Network. Someone you'll find at priceofbusiness.com and our partnering sites is Elizabeth Thee. She's a great friend of the program. Over time, I feel like a friend of mine, and love her insight on a company that was way ahead of its time, and ironically, Elizabeth still seems ahead of its time. Take a minute to tell us a little bit about it and set the stage for us.
Yeah, DT Search has enterprise and developer products that run on-premises or on cloud platforms to instantly search terabytes of office files, PDFs, emails, along with nested attachments, databases, and online data. Because DT Search can instantly search terabytes with over 25 different concurrent search options, many of our customers are Fortune 100 companies and government agencies, but anyone with lots of data to search can download a fully functional 30-day evaluation copy from dtsearch.com.
So we're going to talk about the ghost of Christmas past, and by the way, without a doubt, this changes every other year or so, but one of the Christmas Carol movies or Scrooge movies have to be my favorite Christmas movies, one of them. It's probably the 1980s was George C. Scott. Is probably my favorite. I love this movie, and I'm delighted that that's part of our theme. Plus, the book was unbelievable. What they say about books, the books tell you so much more than the movie. Of course, the movie would be like 5 hours long if it did what the book did. And so read the book, too. But love this topic, The Ghosts of Christmas Past and Enterprise Data. That sounds spooky.
It is spooky. So you might be ready to close out this year's data. However, like the ghost of Christmas past, this year's data will still hang around spookily in your files, emails, and the like, rattling its chains and waiting to cause trouble in the coming year. Enterprise Search can't stop all future hauntings, but by giving you a handle on your organization's data now, Enterprise Search can help blunt the impact if a ghost does emerge.
So how do you get ahead of the ghost of Christmas past when it comes to data?
You start by installing Enterprise Search and let it begin indexing. So let me back up a step here. Enterprise Search can work in two different ways. The first is unindexed search, where you enter a search request and sit back while the software undertakes a brute force march through data for search request matches. Now, that's fine if you're doing a one-time search for a limited number of search terms. However, if you need to repeatedly query terabytes, unindexed search is not going to cut it. The second way enterprise search can work is indexed search.
Talk about that. What is indexing? I mean, we've mentioned it before, but it's worthy of revisiting.
Yeah, indexing pre-processes content by identifying each individual word and number and its place in files. After pre-processing, index search can immediately span terabytes, and it can do so not only using a single search thread, but using multiple concurrent search threads. Multi-threaded index search can run from a classic Windows network, a local web server, or the cloud such as Azure or AWS.
And are there any disadvantages to index search?
Yeah, the main disadvantage is that indexing takes time, although a 64-bit multi-threaded indexing option can speed up the process substantially. But while indexing takes time, it doesn't take a lot of human exertion. With DT Search, just point to the folders to cover and the software will take it from there. The indexer needs to identify the correct format of each file. However, the indexer can obtain that on its own from the binary format. It doesn't even matter if a file has a mismatched extension, like a PDF with an email extension or no file extension at all. Indexing also works with multi-level nested files, like an email with a zip or raw attachment holding an Excel spreadsheet, which itself embeds a Word document, And so long as DD Search can see files as part of the Windows folder system, the files themselves can be local or remote.
So how about capacity?
Yeah, a single DD Search index can hold up to a terabyte of text data, and the software can create and enable instant simultaneous searching across any number of indexes. As end users add new files, edit existing files, and delete old files, DD Search can update its indexes to reflect such changes without affecting continuing concurrent searching for Christmas ghosts or otherwise.
Good. What search options does index searching support then?
Yeah, DD Search has over 25 different search options. Enter a basic all words or any words natural language search. For more precision searching, input a structured phrase, Boolean and or not, and proximity query, such as chain or rattle and ghost pre-12 Christmas past. This search would look for ghosts within 12 words before the phrase Christmas past in any file that also contains either chain or rattle. Concept searching finds specter or spook as synonyms for ghost. Fuzzy searching adjusts from 1 to 10 to sift through typographical or OCR errors like Chris Nass for Chris Mass. To further refine searching, add on a metadata component like subject contains Christmas and not spring break.
Yeah, not spring break, yeah. Even though there is such thing as Christmas as July, we don't want to go there. We're talking spring break. Are there other search features?
Yeah, a date range element can find a date or date range like date September 30th, 2023 to January 15th, 2026, spanning all file texts or just specific metadata. The search will also pick up common date variants like December 25th, 2025, DEC-25, 2025, and 12/2525. DD Search can search for numbers or numeric ranges as well. Index searching can even flag credit card numbers across index data. And for multilingual text, DD Search supports Unicode, which governs the treatment of hundreds of international languages. A single email or other file can go from English to Chinese to Finnish to Japanese, to Greek, to Korean, to Arabic, to Hebrew, with Unicode and DD Search following all of that.
Very good. And what about hidden text?
Yeah, hidden text can truly epitomize the ghost of Christmas past. Index searching can locate not only obvious text that you might see pulling up a file in its associated application, but also camouflage text, such as red lettering against a red background or green lettering against a green background. Searching also covers deleted or redacted content that still remains in a file, even if such content would not by default appear in a file's associated application. Queries can further pick up highly obscure metadata that someone browsing a file in its associated application might completely miss.
Very good. Final thoughts. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. I also want to ask you about how does sorting work. And with that, go ahead and wrap it up.
Yeah, default relevancy ranking sorts by hit density and rarity through index data. Take an any word search for ghost Christmas past. If Christmas and past are relatively common, but ghost mentions rare, ghost will get a higher relevancy ranking, and files with the densest ghost hauntings will come out on top. DD Search also supports custom variable term weighting, like giving ghosts a positive weight of 9, Christmas a positive weight of 4, and Easter a negative weight of 6. Custom variable term weighting can further adjust for the occurrence of search terms near the top or the bottom of a file or in certain metadata. And for a fresh view on search results, DD Search can immediately resort by a different criterion, like file date, file name, or file location, whatever the sorting. Browsing retrieved files with highlighted hits is something you can do for convenient search results navigation. So final thoughts.
Yeah, very good. I was just going to ask.
Yeah, DDSearch.com has fully functional 30-day evaluation downloads to start your organization now on instant multi-threaded searching. Find the ghost of Christmas past, the ghost of Christmas future, or just the necessary information to get on with everyone's day.
Very good. Elizabeth Thede, always enjoy our chats. I will look forward to our next one, DTSearch.com. Do you want to wish you a happy holidays and happy new year, and look forward to our next chat.
Sounds great to me.
All righty. Also, make sure you check out priceofbusiness.com because the link's all over there, in fact. Make sure you check that out. But DTSearch.com, a great organization, way ahead of its time. And still, it's been around for years and still ahead of its time. Love what they do. Stay tuned for more after this.
That wraps up another Price of Business. I am glad to be with you. Really enjoyed it and enjoying our new home here on these stations around the country. I do want to remind you that the show continues 24/7. Not only do we have this weekly show that you can hear on this station, but we're on other stations around the country with a daily program as well. You can easily learn about them by visiting us at priceofbusiness.com. We affectionately say it is the show that never ends. And what we mean by that is that it continues 24/7 with the addition of new audio, video, articles, and more at priceofbusiness.com. While there, we'd like you to engage with us on social media. Follow us on Facebook and, like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Kevin Price Live and all of our sister sites as well. All right, I'm going to take a break until next time. Next week, we'll be back with you with much more information for you, and look forward to that conversation. And I want to say, again, thank you to USA Business Radio to make it possible for this to have been commercial-free, an entire hour of commercial-free. And guess what? Even more commercial-free than public radio. So we're excited about that. Enjoy the rest of your day right here on this station.